The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 109 for May 7th, 2014. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I gather to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me to this evening? I was going to say...
It is a day.
This evening? It's one of those nights, man. It's one of those nights.
I can't even say what you were trying to say.
Neither can I. John Beck.
Yes.
You've been on here before, a long time ago.
Yes, at least a year.
And it has been a long time. It's good to have you back, my friend. What's new?
It's good to be back. Not much. I haven't podcasted in ages, and it saddens me a little.
Well, we're happy to break that habit.
Yes.
And you hail from sites such as SayHiTranslate.com?
Yes, I am the lead designer and co-founder of Say Hi Translate on the App Store. So for all your portable translation, conversational translation needs, check it out on the iOS App Store. At some point, we will have an Android app at some point. But
very cool.
It's in the works.
Any new projects on the go?
You ever get those, like, I have an idea, let's see if I can do it, you know, like, you just kind of throw something together?
As a matter of fact, I have, and I've had it with you.
This is true.
It's currently
but
in the
I
ether.
Actually completed this one.
I see.
My wife, you know, when, and all couples have the conversation about babies at some point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think the most exciting thing about talking about babies is talking about naming your child.
Mm-hmm.
There's all the rest is like scary and like, you're like, how are we going to pay for this and all that other stuff. But naming the baby is like the immediate thing. We're like, oh, what are we going to name our child? So as my wife and I have talked about it, off and on for many years, there's never been like a, like, we went to different websites, and there's a lot of great websites to find name ideas, right? But I've never seen anything that really lets me make a list and share that, like, I wanted, like, a communal, editable list of names.
Mm-hmm.
To share with my wife so that we can sort of, like, when she finds a name, she could, put one on the list. And then I wanted something that actually sort of would be able to suggest names based off of the names that you've chosen already, and also to be able to sort of see them all kind of jumbled up together. So, like, here's all my first names that I like, and here's all the middle names that I like, and then let me see what they all look like in different combinations.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can actually find ones that work together. I just started sitting down and coding one day because I was interested in it, and a couple months later, I launched juxtaname.com, and it's a very, very soft launch, but it's out there. It's up there. It's sort of, I think even the email, I think my emails are all labeled as a beta, so
mm-hmm.
It's basically in testing and still some feature building, and hope to build it out into a lot of useful sort of data-driven kind of recommendations, you know, especially when you get a lot of users actually choosing names, to be able to see what other people are like, who liked your name, like that, you know, that sort of thing.
Like, how did they arrive at the name that they chose? And you might find a favorite on their road.
Right. Or like, you know, if you like the name John for first name, here are the most popular middle names with John, that sort of thing. Like, you know, like, so it can really kind of suggest some things that you may not have already thought of, So it's got a lot of potential, but it needs sort of a user base. And it's one of those things, again, that sort of throwaway project where you're like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it. And like, it was a challenge for me to say, here is the smallest phase of this project that I can do and complete
mm-hmm.
and get out there as a legitimate workable product and see, is there interest? Can I get people using it? And then once that starts going, if there is any sort of real monetary interest in this, then I can start building it up further.
Yeah. And I think that, having interest in a project is really key.
Yeah.
I've been struggling lately with some of the creative projects that I want to do or feel I have an opportunity to do and I should do.
Yep.
And I'm discovering quite quickly that I am, I guess, deep down, just not interested in them.
It's
because
so important to know really, and to be able to say to yourself, I'm obviously not putting time into this, so I must not be interested in this.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is that's holding me back. I mean, like, it's no giant secret. I mean, I wanted to do, and I've even spoke to you about this. I wanted to do a Wildstar podcast.
Yeah.
And
I was there. I was like, yes, do this.
Yeah,
let's do this.
Absolutely.
I will help you. Let's do this.
Yeah, and I do like the idea of it. But it's a combination of like, they just had another beta weekend, didn't even know.
Yep.
So, I mean, if I'm not aware of when a beta weekend is happening on this game, I am
especially
not.
Especially since it's kind of every weekend.
Yeah. And I'm not so steeped,
in
all of their news that I'm not, you know, reading all the stuff, and there's no way I should be, you know, doing a podcast about it. Well, at least not into the capacity where I would be, you know, the one doing the research. You know, like if I think I've come to the conclusion that I would like to show up for a weekly Wildstar podcast.
See, and that's exactly what I want to do.
Yeah, like I don't mind the technical stuff. Like I don't mind, you know, the idea of doing the editing and,
okay.
you know, doing artwork and all that kind of stuff. I don't mind the hardware, you know, creative audio part of it. It's the, I don't have time to schedule guests, you know, if we have that or, you know, do news research, do notes. And you can't just rely on community on episode one to do that kind of stuff for you. You really kind of have to have all that kind of stuff in the bag. And hey, if you get help later on, that's great, but you can't just depend on that going forward. And I don't think that it's that I don't enjoy the game or don't want to play it. Jocelyn gave me the game for my birthday.
Nice.
And super excited. Great gift. And I think part of me is just, I don't want to overplay it. Like, I don't want to play in the beta. I'm going to jump in and reserve my name on the 17th or whatever. I got a newsletter just today, actually.
Open beta starts tomorrow.
Okay.
So you have like 10 days to go back in and play some more if
mm-hmm.
you wanted to mess around a little.
Yeah.
And if you haven't played it in a while, I would go in and just touch it.
Okay. Yeah.
I knew new interface.
There's new UI. Yeah.
The interface has been completely overhauled. It looks fantastic. And the biggest thing I think is it, which is such a tiny thing, but multiple body shapes for characters, and I've been waiting so long, and I was hoping they were going to be able to do something with that, and they finally
they did
snuck it in there.
Yeah, I did. I logged in long enough to download that patch and look at the character builder. I didn't actually log in and play and see anything in motion.
Mm.
I don't even know, like, if I've made a couple characters up to like level 7 or 8, and I don't even know if they're going to be able to stay. I don't think they stay past the beta. It sounds like everything gets wiped.
No, everything will get wiped when right before head start.
Right, and I think I've got a head start because I've pre-ordered.
Yes.
Those are the things that I've been.
So you can
at.
You can log in. Nothing you do when you log in for the open beta will matter in the end.
With the exception of the one character name reservation.
Yeah, the only thing I will say is if you do just log in, they've been give. I don't know if they're doing it for open beta but for the closed beta weekends, they've basically been giving away a couple of like prize boxes every time you log in. So like
right.
when the game launches, you'll get like a bunch of like free stuff when you just for logging in.
Cool.
So I've been trying to log in just at least to get some free stuff, but.
Yeah. Well, and see, this is my issue is that, like I haven't been logging in. I haven't had that kind of interest. And I thought, well, I mean, I love the art style for the game. I've enjoyed what little I've played. But because I don't want to spoil my first month of official play, I haven't really given it all of my attention. Which makes it hard to start a podcast. Now, I might be playing that first month and go, oh God, I have to start a podcast right now. I don't know where I'd find the time to do it. I think I would have to find, I would be losing sleep in order to produce yet another
because
show.
Because on top of that, you also have to be playing.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. And that's the other thing is that I would never be, I would not be starting any kind of hardcore show. I would be saying, hey, I am one of the many people out there that is going to be playing this game for maybe 3 to 4 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know, so this is our show. You know, this is this show that I have time for, and hopefully you do too.
Right.
Because we're going to be solely, you know, sorely behind everybody else that's playing this game and getting to the end game in the first, you know, 6 or 8 weeks. And I'm just not interested in that. I like enjoying the content and all that kind of stuff. So I'm still toying around with it, but I mean, something has to give. I mean, right now, because I've taken over all the scheduling and guest finding for Comics Coast to Coast, and also for this show, because with Peyton not able to make it on a regular basis, I also have to find people to step in for the Citadel Cafe. And
pain in the butt, isn't it?
It is a pain in the butt. I enjoy doing the shows. It's just that, and the problem with the Citadel Cafe is like, even after a few months of this, it is not forefront in my brain to schedule people a few weeks out. So right. I'm always scrambling, always scrambling. Now, luckily, I have quite a few friends that are podcasters, and I can get them, you know, kind of on a week's notice or a couple days' notice. But with, in particular, with Game of Thrones, it's tricky because you really need people to be up to speed and all that kind of stuff. And then with Comics Coast to Coast, that's a little bit more. What's
legit?
I'm looking for? Yeah. Well, it's a little bit more. There's more pressure because. Both myself and Brian and Matt all have to read an archive of comics before we interview the creator. So getting a guest on Monday for a Thursday show is not a good idea. Like
you've got to be planning that month.
Yeah.
Out.
So I'm trying to schedule that in like, you know, 3 to 6 weeks out. So that takes up a lot of my podcast time, you know, cause the other part of the week I'm trying to, you know, devote to art and comics and all that other kind of stuff. And, it does seem to take longer than you think, you know, for podcasts. So when I was thinking about where I would add a third podcast, what night I would have to record on, all that kind of stuff. I also like to see my girlfriend, you know, so there's these little things that kind of come up.
Lives there,
yeah.
Right?
Well, she does, but we have Monday to Friday for us is a blitzkrieg of, I mean, she's got two podcasts, I've got two podcasts, she's got a volleyball night, and our podcasts do not happen on the same evening. So, I mean, like all of a sudden there's only Tuesday night.
You got to coordinate that shit.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, there's something.
You know, it may have to be opposite ends of the apartment or whatever, you know, so you're not like cross, you know, contaminating the streams.
Yeah, don't cross the streams, right?
But, you know, yeah, it's just what, you know, I would say, you know, that's probably, you know, especially, how long have you guys lived together now?
2 years in June.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't imagine that does it feel like 2 years?
No.
Like if you weren't this busy, it might feel like 2 years. I should say, like, you know, it's absence makes the heart grow fonder, all that sort of stuff. You know, you know, it's not bad for couples to be busy and to have their own stuff.
No, I agree.
But you're absolutely right. You got to make time for each other. You know, the one thing that I've been really dying to do podcast wise, I keep trying to do something with my wife, Sandy, so that, you know, she's got great speaking voice. She's done, you know, VO work before in the past, you know, and it's always tough to find the thing that we both are going to really get behind and be able to do something about. And one of the things I've always thought about was like, you know, some sort of co-op gaming, you know, like gaming as couples, you know, and, you know, our sort of talking about our experiences of, you know, like we played the Secret World together. Every MMO we play as a couple. We play as a duo. We sit down and we play those characters together. And some work, some horribly do not work. And we always felt, you know, I felt like that could be a possibility. But even with her, you know, it's getting so hard for her to even find time to play with her work schedule. So we are working on a project that's very loosely, I'm doing most of the setup work, but we had the concept of, she's a huge, we met doing Shakespeare, and she went to school for theater and big
cool.
Shakespearean actress.
I knew that. That's awesome.
So we came up with the idea of doing some sort of Shakespeare podcast, And in my, you know, I sort of have, in the next podcast that I do, I have kind of like, this is the demands I have of myself. It needs to be video, because I feel like audio podcasts are just so hard to market. And, you know, hard to build a really good following. And then, of course, monetize it possibly, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to monetize content, YouTube is still a fantastic place to do it. If you've got good enough content. So that's my hope, is to do something, something video podcast. And so we started talking about it. I'm like, well, she doesn't want to be on camera because she doesn't particularly like how she looks on camera. I have no problem being on camera. I don't think I'm particularly great looking or anything, but I don't have, you know, I'm comfortable and it doesn't matter. I've been
you
recording
guys
myself.
Are both charming and good looking. Stop it.
Well, it's in it. I think for her, it's the on camera thing. She, you know, it's like sometimes, you know, like the two dimensionality, like when it does something that it does to your face, she just doesn't like what it looks like. You know, I don't know. Anyway, so she won't go on camera. And so I'm like, okay, we need something that's voiceover. And I'm like, we could do some sort of animated thing, but that takes so much work for every single thing, no matter how much we automate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then I was like, okay, puppets. So I think we're going to do puppets doing Shakespeare.
Nice.
So I am currently building puppets, and it's a really nice sort of break from computer work and to be able to, you know, carve foam and sew
and do stuff with your hands. Yeah, that's very, very cool. Are you at all a fan of Glove and Boots? Do you know that particular YouTube channel?
No, I don't think I've heard of it.
They are puppets.
Yep.
They are short videos, like 2 to 3 minutes, and they are freaking hilarious. Absolutely check them out. Really, really good stuff. And they do just, you know, things like, you know, internet top 10 lists, and or they just, you know, talk about, you know, text speak and why it sounds ridiculous when people say it out loud, or like they cover a lot of, like, you know, kind of pop culture things, like, you know.
Yeah, we still have to kind of like find like what really is our hook for whatever, whatever this project turns into, you know? I mean, it could just be puppets doing Shakespeare, but it could be so much more.
Satire, perhaps, yeah.
Right. And so, I have sort of an idea of it could turn, you know, if a screen test of, like, Hamlet, you know, does all right and we can get, you know, the process going, then we might do some sort of, like, this is a puppet community theater that does Shakespeare, and so you have all the other crap going on, you know, sort of a Christopher Guest, you know, kind of mockumentary thing with puppets.
Right on. Do you remember the Christopher Reeves bit from The Muppet Show where he did Hamlet?
I think I saw a picture of it. Yeah. I've never seen it. I think I saw a picture of it looking through performances of Hamlet on television.
Yeah. Look it up. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. It's worth it. Absolutely worth it. It's very, very
and
funny.
And of course, you know, the my favorite one, of course, is Patrick Stewart doing a bee or not a bee on Sesame Street.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you mentioned him, actually. Joss and I were just talking about him and Ian McKellen the other day, and how it is an absolute delight to watch these two guys hanging out together
and get high all the time.
Well, yeah, just post everything they're doing on Instagram and Facebook. It's like these guys are leading a pretty good life, you know, and they seem pretty freaking happy. And it's really cool to see, because I mean, they're obviously, if they're not grandparents, they're certainly old enough to be. I remember what my grandparents were like, and they were nothing like these guys. And it's really cool to see people of that age just embracing absolutely everything the world has to offer. Granted, I realize they have the means to do that.
True.
But I just find it endlessly entertaining to see what, you know, they've done next for whatever holiday. Like, I just remember one really campy picture of Patrick Stewart cutting a pizza with a Enterprise pizza cutter. And I just, you know, the irony was not lost on me, like, or him, I don't think.
Right.
It's just, and it didn't look like it was, you know, it didn't look like it a fancy thing. It was just like some, you know, $10 internet piece of crap that he's just like.
No, he is revealing himself to be an utter dork, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, very cool. Very, very cool. I was going to ask you about something. I can't remember what it is now, so it must have been a lie. Well, I mean, I guess we can move into some Game of Thrones stuff if you'd like.
Yeah, that's fine.
For you, dear listeners, this is where we spoil the Game of Thrones. This is our Winter is Coming segment. If you have not seen episode 5 of season 4, First of His Name is the title of the show, then please cease listening for now. Come back later when you have seen the show, because we spoil the living crap out of it and we make no apologies for it. We, however, do not spoil the books. So, John, refresh my memory. Have you read the books?
Yes, but I love the fact that I can forget almost everything that happens in a book most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, eventually it kind of comes back, but usually I kind of have to refresh my memory. So let me, just to be clear, no comparing a scene to the way it happened in the book?
Not unless you're absolutely sure it was something that happened in book 3. For example.
If
it happened in the show, then sure.
Okay.
Like, if it's happened in the show, it's fair game. And that's how we've been handling it. Lately, we've discovered this awkward gray area where the HBO show is moving the timeline around a little bit, and you're thinking like,
"Ooh, that's the only problem is things happen a certain way in the book. Those events that were left out might still happen just in a different order."
Yeah. So I mean, if you're not sure, just err on the
small things. Yeah. Like, those are very, you know.
They're not overly important.
Right.
I mean, people still seem to die at the same point.
I think we can, you know, look, somebody dies. That's not a spoiler.
Exactly. I say somebody dies in a gruesome way. Also, not a spoiler. That's every week. At any rate, the episode title is, of course, First of His Name. A quick plot summary is Cersei and Tywin plot the crown's next move. Daenerys discusses future plans with Jorah Mormont. Is it? Jorah? Yeah.
Jorah
Mormont. And John embarks on a new mission. So I guess we can just kind of start at the beginning. And something that I really enjoyed about this episode in particular were two conversations. The first was with Cersei and Margaery. And I thought it was a really interesting exchange in the throne room after Tommen was crowned, that I was like, Cersei is being really nice.
And
genuinely nice. And it seemed like If it wasn't for the fact that Margaery is another woman that is having her future being decided for her, also looking to be queen of the realm, which Cersei knows what that's like, I think that's the only reason she's giving her even the remotest hint of, I wouldn't say kindness, but just...
I think it's more to do with Tommen myself.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I mean, yes, that's there, but I think there's more to it than just, like, I think she's just really vulnerable at this point, and she is actively looking for the good in the situation. And that's what the whole conversation is about, them talking about, you know, Tommen is legitimately has potential to be a phenomenal king.
Right.
And he's, you know, she needs to make sure, you know, that he is taken care of, that he has the support that he needs. You know, and that, you know, that he's not in a relationship, you know, she doesn't want a relationship like she had.
No, of course
not. You
know,
where she was completely used and, you know, abused by her, you know, by Robert Baratheon. And you know, and so it's like, I just found it really interesting, because you go into the episode from the previous episode, you know, the Margaery is expecting that, you know, she's already been sneaking around, you know, talking to Tommen and expecting that she's going to face her adversary, Cersei. Mm. And it's a complete roundabout.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you can tell that Margaery's completely taken back by, like, oh, whoa, okay, that was not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I find that it's interesting as well that they both have to refer to their fathers as to, like, you know, what their plans are and whether they can get their permission for whatever they want to set in motion. And I was also thinking that, along with, you know, Cersei trying to find either I can see what you're saying now about her trying to find the good in the situation. I felt that Cersei was defeated. Like, did you feel at all that she seemed just like she'd given up with whatever her plans are, and she's just like, she's not scheming anymore?
Well, what were her plans? Like, it was always protecting her young.
Mm.
You know, it was always protecting her young and the state of the throne and things like that. And I think at this point, because Joffrey is dead, that protection has changed. Mm. And what her other son needs, very different.
Yeah. Yeah, she needed people to help control Joffrey and keep him alive, but also keep him in line. And right. They need certainly less of that with Tommen, it looks like.
And we finally got an admission that he scared the crap out of her.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
That was such a great moment.
Mm-hmm. We saw a hint of it, not that she ever admitted it, but we saw a hint of it in the very first time when Joffrey stood up to her. Mm. And said, like, don't ever strike me again. And it was, like, in front of the court. It wasn't, like, a full-on court in attendance, but it was, like, there was people in the throne room.
Yeah.
And she smacked him, and he either caught her hand or he hit her back. I don't remember exactly what he did. But the look on her face was just, ooh, crap.
They definitely made it clear that she was afraid of him. Mm-hmm. But this was the first time, I believe, that she actually said it out loud. Mm. And that, I think, was a huge... I think this whole episode was a turning, like, just this really interesting turning points for a lot of people. And I have to say, this is so far my favorite episode of the season.
Oh, really?
Just because, and it had not, there was no huge action.
No.
Nothing happened.
No, it was a good episode. I mean, I like them all. I have a hard time picking favorites, but I feel like, I don't know, I feel like episode, was it three? No, four. Oathkeeper, I think, was my favorite so far.
Mm.
The one with... Because I really enjoy Brienne and Jaime. And I feel like that was probably tops on my list so far this year. But yeah, no, I just... this episode in particular was good for... I feel like a lot of clarity. Does that make...
Yeah.
That makes sense? The other thing that we get to see was a conversation between Cersei and Tywin, which I also thought was really good. And it was a very effective way, a very good way to explain to the viewer... how the kingdom really works, and yeah. that this, you know, big kingdom that they're protecting and trying to, you know, keep is really poorly run and in a huge amount of debt to the Iron Bank of Braavos. It has a lot of, I guess, current real world parallels in terms of, you know, governments and countries and huge amounts of debt and all of the things that go with that. And I, you know, like Tywin is just kind of like matter of fact laying it out for Cersei, you know, who their allies are, who they need them to continue to be, talking about the Tyrells being the only real challengers to the Lannisters. And yep. as long as they're our friends, it's all good. But I thought it was a great way of saying, like, you know, I don't have a proud job of running this kingdom. I have the arduous task of making sure this kingdom doesn't get smushed, you know, under the thumb of debt and decay. And
right.
Let Tommen be the king and the figurehead and I'll try to, you know, keep everybody's head above water. And I thought it was a very, not only just interesting, but also a great way to remind everybody, like, it's not just as simple as, you know, being a king and making new rules and all that kind of stuff. Seems to be a lot going on.
And I just love the irony of all, you know, all these people trying to get into the bloodline of the, you know, of the kingdom and to, you know, to become a part of that. You know, you've got the whole, you know, the whole reason Joffrey is dead, you know, all these things that have been put in motion because of pretty much the Tyrells.
Mm-hmm.
And Margaery, you know, all the scheming that Margaery and is her mother or is
it her grandmother, Olenna Tyrell, yeah.
You know, all that has been happening up until this point, and then we finally get to see the flip side of it, and they're like, yeah, we're broke. Like, I'm like, oh, you guys are in for it. Like, they're going to get married into this family and find out that there's nothing there.
Yeah. That
there's no worth to the Lannister name anymore.
And Lannisters are banking on the Tyrells. I mean, like, they're the ones yep. with the money, right? Like, that's
right.
the reason for all this, you know, all the marriages in general is just, it's because of the money that the Tyrells can bring to the table. And money and goods. I mean, like, as far as I can tell in the series, that Highgarden, which is where the Tyrells hail from, is very rich in terms of farmland and produce and export.
Right.
Which is why they're so wealthy. There was one other thing I was going to say about the whole money thing. Oh, he talks about the Lannister source of income, which was a mountain or something like that. It was a mine.
Yeah.
And it's been
The gold mines have gone, you know.
Yeah, for 3 years.
Yeah.
So for as long as the, you know, for as long as we have been in Westeros, you know, for three seasons.
Well, and basically Robert did this. Mm. Robert Baratheon pretty much drove the kingdom into the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, he had feasts every other weekend and tournaments
and
things like that. I mean, they've been married into the crown, but they've been funding the crown, and the crown has just been throwing their money away.
Yeah, because
and finally they own the crown, and they've got nothing.
Yeah, yeah, because I mean that's what happens when the kingdom is run by a jock,
right? Now the cycle is completing.
Yeah,
because now they're doing the same thing, you know, to the Tyrells.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just who's gonna fund the crown next?
Yeah, geez. I don't remember. Is any point in the series is Daenerys coming across money? She's got people. I know she's got followers, but she's not like cash rich, is she?
I don't think it's really talked about.
Yeah.
I think she just has manpower, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought too.
And dragons. I mean, well, they did. I mean, they had the whole like she traded for this or that, and you know they were going to sell the dragons, and then she just took it all.
Yeah, like, yeah.
So I think they probably have. I think money is not an issue. Probably they have money because they stole it out of some of the places that they pillaged along the way.
Right, right.
But other than that, I don't think you know. They were talking about because they had to buy. It basically comes down to when she can't buy something, she takes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of Daenerys, we got a nice little visit with her, too. And that was, again, more just, you know, positioning and planning for what she intends to do. And surprisingly, despite, you know, getting a gift from Dario Naharis, who has sacked Marine's Navy and basically giving it to her, she kind of feigns some distaste at his accomplishment without her permission, then very quickly smiles kind of when she's not looking at anybody. And I thought that was really clever the way that, you know, they're still letting everybody know that she's got, you know, a sweet spot for him. And I thought
even though he looks nothing like he did a year ago.
Well, I would argue that this guy's better looking.
Like, oh, no, I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you've changed. I actually really like the actor, and I can never remember his name, but he was on he was on Nashville for a while.
Okay.
And then looks like he left that and went to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no, I enjoy him much better.
Really, really good actor. I think Daenerys is such a weird entity in this whole storyline because she's completely disconnected from everybody.
Yeah.
And everyone else is sort of disconnected from each other, but there's tertiary connections. You know, they're all on the same continent, at least. They're all fighting over the same crown.
And when you're walking around that continent, you're going to run into people that are loyal to one faction or the other.
Sure, right. Yeah. And there's a lot more connection there. And she is just off doing her own thing. And she finally has a chance to go back and make a pretty decent go at taking over King's Landing. And she chooses the nobler route. And and this is one of the reasons why I think this is one of my favorite episodes, is every character you got to see this enormous growth with. And the fact that she stood her ground and was like, I am going to be a queen and I am going to rule and I'm going to go back and save all the people that, you know, it's sort of the, well, I guess what could be said of what America does. You go in, you free the people, you leave them to fend for themselves, and they just go back to the way they were. And so she is realizing that, you know, she can't just strike a warpath through this continent and leave all these people behind to pick up her mess.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because with the previous slavers of Astapor and other places that she's sacked, rising back up to take their place on their previous chairs as slavers and rulers and tyrants, I think it gives her a great motivation to stay.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like going to King's Landing is the expected choice, yet staying and on, what's the continent called? Do you remember where she is? Yeah.
Remember?
No, it's not Braavos. Braavos is a city, but anyway,
the desert place.
Yeah, she's across the Narrow Sea, and while she's there, you know, she feels responsible and her true passions are in freeing slaves. You know, while I think that taking over King's Landing and putting herself, quote unquote, rightly on the throne is not as high a priority as it once was.
Right.
It was a good excuse at first, but I think she's found a moral compass over a political one.
Yeah, and well, and it's she has a new motive. Her motivation was always her bloodline.
Mm.
Like, she, you know, it was always this weird sort of de facto, it's because, you know, she's a Targaryen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and that's, that puts her in the same place of everybody else. Everyone else is, I'm so-and-so, and I deserve to have the crown. And this finally showing her, you know, shows that she's realizing that to be a ruler is not, you can't, you know, you're not, having the blood, you know, royal blood does not make you a good leader.
Right.
And that she is deciding to become a leader worthy of, you know, ruling the entire world.
Yeah. Yeah. Was her father the Mad King? Or was that her uncle?
Yeah. I don't remember the direct.
At any rate, I mean, like he was a Targaryen. He was obviously not a good ruler. He was batshit crazy,
right?
You know, yeah. So I agree. Speaking of batshit crazy, Lysa Arryn with Sansa and Littlefinger.
Yes.
My God, dude! Like, I remember the first time we met Lysa with a 5-year-old breastfeeding on her lap. And I immediately went, oh no, there's a bag of hammers that I don't want to deal with.
Yep.
But you know, having read the first book and all that kind of stuff, I knew what to expect, but they do such a good job in the show of making her absolutely strung out. Like there is something that is just so creepy about her and
the desperation that just oozes out of her.
And the most irritating characteristic that I've found in any show of any character, which is a good tool if you're a writer, is that characters that don't listen really get under your skin, and in the best way possible. Like it's an excellent tool as a you know, the creator of characters. If you want to have someone that just you just cannot wait for something horrible to happen to them, make them a bad guy, but make them just incapable of listening to anyone.
Right.
And this woman is just. She's not only she's not listening, she's completing people's sentences in her own head.
Right.
Like the conversation that she has with Sansa as she's trying to sort out whether Sansa is screwing Littlefinger while she's holding Sansa's hands and crushing her fingers. Like just
The whole lead up to it though was brilliant. Like it was just this amazing manipulation of this sweet conversation, talking, you know, leading into her, you know, talking about her mother. Mm-hmm. And talking, you know, about and the whole reason she's doing that is to you know, she's plugging the connection between Littlefinger and her mother, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's like it was really well crafted. And at that point, I mean, you really have to hand it to George, these conversations that they have, and like, you know, and you know, then the show to take the conversation and bring them to life in such a visceral way. I was enthralled by that entire scene, and just like, oh God, she's so creepy.
Well, and creepy and completely unpredictable.
Yep.
Like I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew she was going to be all over Littlefinger. I knew that was going to happen, and I knew that, you know, and that was kind of expected because that's what she wants. She wants marriage, power, security, right?
It's not even about that, though. She wants Littlefinger. She specifically wants what she never could have.
Right.
He is the man that never loved her because he always loved her sister.
Yeah, well, and for good reason.
Well, yeah. She's batshit crazy.
Well, yeah, there's that. Oh, man. Like, I think that's something that I found so interesting about the conversation that she had with Sansa is that, like, sure, I've read the books, but like they tend to be creative with the show in ways that I don't expect, and I didn't know what she was gonna do, and I just felt so awful for Sansa, who was just, you know, kidnapped in King's Landing and held prisoner by the crown and all the stuff, and now at this one chance of potential freedom, even though she doesn't trust Littlefinger as far as you can throw him, she has one opportunity to just kind of like take a breath, and she has long enough to eat a lemon cake. And then Lysa just rips into her, and it's just, yeah. Oh, this poor kid. It just cannot get a break to save her life. It's just ridiculous.
And so can we talk a minute about something that's in the book?
Sure. As long as it happened on the show.
Well, it didn't happen. This is what did not happen.
Then no.
It's the same. It should have been in that scene, and it didn't happen.
I'm going to err on no because I don't know what you're talking about. So we don't want to spoil it for anybody.
It's related to, you know, the uproar of that everyone's been in for the past couple of weeks.
No.
About like the Cersei and the Cersei rape scene thing.
Oh, in the Sept?
Yes.
I didn't know there was an uproar. I knew it was an uncomfortable scene to watch.
There is a lot of talk on the internet about the misogynistic aspect of Game of Thrones.
Mm, okay.
And they're sort of blaming the show creators. Like it amazes me. You know, it's, you know, there was, you know, in that scene, it sort of came across like he was raping her because she said no, 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 not mm-hmm. here repeatedly.
Yeah.
And a lot of people took that very literally. And, you know, in the book, it's different because people are in different places. Like, they've really screwed up with the timeline a lot.
Yeah, and this is the trouble that I find, too, is that they're messing around with some things that even characters have said or thought about doing, and now they're doing them, and it gets a little bit foggy as to when things are happening, yeah.
Yeah, and the, you know, the interesting thing for a couple episodes with that weird crypt sex scene was that it was in the book. It's the first time she sees Jamie. He wasn't back.
Right.
So it's a very different thing. You know, she is so relieved to have the love of her life back and the father of her child back. And they end up having sex there. And it's really weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's not Jamie forcing himself upon her.
Well, and that's what I didn't recall that when I was watching that scene from the books, and that's why I thought that it was a little bit strange.
It was a little weird, but it was like it wasn't I think, but everyone seems to sort of be up in arms about like the constant raping and things like that. I'm like these are horrible men. And I think the really interesting thing in it's a scene we haven't really talked about, but Cersei talking to what's his face, the other Tyrell, the prince.
Oh, he's not a Tyrell.
Who
Prince
is he?
Of Dorne.
Ah, yes. She's talking to the Prince of Dorne, and he, you know, I guess she's one of her daughter is actually being, I don't know what the word is, not squired.
No, she's Myrcella is in Dorne.
Yeah, she is being taken care of by them, and
yeah.
As some sort of you know, I'm assuming it's basically political prison. You know, like you give a child
it was a
to another house.
It was a combo thing. It was I think that Dorne needed. I think that King's Landing needed Dorne.
Yeah.
So that Myrcella is now spending a lot of time in Dorne for two reasons. One, to get her out of King's Landing to protect
right.
her, because at the time Stannis was bearing down on King's Landing.
Right.
So both Tommen and Myrcella were dispatched. I feel like Tommen went to the Tyrells. I don't remember. I could be wrong. And then Myrcella went to Dorne. And the reason was that Dorne agreed to help King's Landing, but they said, hey, yeah, we'll help you, but we want to marry into the crown. So I think that Myrcella, even though she's not old enough to marry, was sent to Dorne for protection and then to get to know the lifestyle, get to know the kingdom,
right.
possibly fall in love with one of the, you know, maybe not fall in love, but get to know the, I don't remember the Dornish prince's name right
but
now.
But there's always, in this type of environment, there's always that sort of, there's definitely this sort of collateral thing that goes on where
basically
trade children.
Nothing ever happens for free. No, exactly.
You know, and so it's like, but there was this really beautiful moment in their conversation when she's, you know, she's gifting her daughter a ship and she's saying, you know, she's asking about her daughter and he was like, nothing bad happens to women in Dorne.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks at him squarely and says, bad things happen to women everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this, you know, it's those moments that really tell why we need in the story the horribleness of the men. know, it explains so much about the state of everything. And, you know, there's some bad stuff that may or may not be happening to Sansa up where she is, that did happen in the book basically the same night that she's listening to them having sex. And it's like they didn't put that in. Maybe they'll put it in later, but there's stuff that's kind of like they're either choosing not to, just because they're choosing how much they need to and when they feel it's necessary to put that much violence, you know. And you know, we had plenty of rape happening in last episode and this episode.
Well, I mean, all of Game of Thrones in general, there's been, you know,
raped almost every episode.
There's a lot of it, yeah. And I feel like, that takes us into, you know, the scenes with Jon Snow and Bran, where, I mean, Jon is attacking Craster's Keep and killing the crows that have betrayed their oaths and have been there drinking and raping all of these poor women that were once Craster's wives. And we're not treated well by Caster in the first place.
And we have to see that. We have to see how far they've gone.
Oh, and you have to... I mean, this guy Carl that was running the show there, the assassin from King's Landing.
He's so good.
Oh my God, he's good. And he's just... like, you just want to smack the smirk off of his face every time he's on camera. Or, in John's case, put a sword through the back of his skull and have it come out his mouth.
I was just like... you know those moments in the theater where like something happens in the movie and everybody stands up and cheers?
Yeah.
Like that was that moment. It was such a beautifully designed death scene.
Yeah.
Because the way his mouth was moving and then the sword coming just straight through his open mouth, like out of nowhere, and like you knew something was gonna happen, but it was amazingly elegant. And I, you know, it's one of those things where like the beauty of the gratuitousness.
Well, and Jocelyn said the same thing. I mean, like we both kind of had the exact same reaction. It was like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, like we were, it took us by surprise.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those moments where you just completely, it catches you off guard and it grosses you out for a nanosecond before you realize, ooh, no, I don't like him. This is good.
Yeah.
You know, but the other thing too, I mean, they obviously went through that particular location in his body on purpose because the guy just doesn't shut up. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I knew as soon as the girl had stabbed him, like, all right, well, now he's turned his back on John and that's a bad thing. So the guy's going to die. I was expecting the sword to come through his chest. Like, you know, John just kind of takes a low guard and just shoves the sword up between his ribs and out the front of his chest, thinking, okay, yeah, great, done. Did not expect it to come through the back of his head or the front of it.
Is it physically possible to do what he did?
He
overhanded the sword through the back of his skull. It was such a weird, awkward position.
Well, I don't
I didn't care.
Yeah, I think it was a stab thing. Like, I think I've seen it before where people, they raise the sword up and then they use their other hand to guide the blade, especially with a big sword like that. So, like, your glove, like, one of your gloves will have, like, a pad on it that won't get cut. So that you raise it up and almost like how you would notch an arrow, you know, so you kind of put the tip of the blade where you want it to go and then you just kind of guide it with your other hand and then just use your quote unquote, your bow hand, you know, to drive the sword forward. And I've seen it with other shows like Rome, when they would kill somebody, they would drive a sword down through the back of his neck.
Have you seen somebody drive?
No, just other shows like that. That there always seems to be like one hand is kind of like the aiming hand, and the other hand kind of. But it only happens when you have the opportunity to sneak up behind somebody and aim, right?
I still have doubts that in reality that it could actually be done, but it does not matter because it was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely gruesome. And Jocelyn made the comment that, you know, like so many people in Game of Thrones that have these gruesome deaths are people that really, really deserve it. You know, like there's a couple of heroes that have died that didn't, but when they really want to drive a point home, it is grisly. You know, I mean, the next one, of course.
I have to say, I was waiting, and this is the difference between reading a book and watching a show. I had that reaction with the Joffrey death scene, reading the book. Because it was just so waiting for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Finally!
Mm-hmm.
But the way it played out in the show, it just didn't have the same impact, like, just actively watching it. And it's sort of, like, it's such a slow burn, and it was kind of a weird difference.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I was really surprised in the book, and I was unfortunately spoiled for the show. So it did not have the same effect on me that it did in several people.
Yeah, I was waiting for it, and I'm like, this is gonna be, like, I felt, it, like, you know, well, again, they have... we have the red wedding. Is the black wedding?
Purple wedding. Because he turns blue.
I knew it was coming, and I was expecting another moment like the red wedding, where, you know, because even then, when the red wedding happened, you, no matter whether it was spoiled or not, oh boy, was that crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, and the difference is, like, I didn't know when the Red Wedding was going to happen in the series, but I knew when it happened in the timeline. So when, of course, they were doing that wedding feast in the show, I knew that something was going to happen, but I didn't know how they were going to handle it.
Yep.
And I feel like Jeffrey's death is less complicated than the Red Wedding, and you don't know how far they were going to do things at the Red Wedding, whereas Joffrey, it's like, well, he gets poisoned and he dies. Like, I mean, there's only so many ways that you can shoot that.
Yeah, no, I think in this case, it is a difference between reading and seeing, and a poisoning is a hell of a lot more, exciting in a book than it is on screen.
Mm. Like, yeah, no, it's funny how, like, he's this monster of a king that just kind of peters out.
Yeah,
and I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it had this bittersweet irony almost, like, to it, and you have the whole lead up to it with the. You know, his just utter torture of Tyrion.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah. The other gruesome death that happened this past episode was Locke, the now Night's Watch brother, quite skilled, but not when Hodor's got you by the shoulders.
Yeah. You know, I was sad when he went bad, because I wanted to like him. I wanted him to be a good guy. And it's just yet another reminder that pretty much the Night's Watch is full of really bad people.
Really bad people, yeah. No, I agree. And I thought, too, that he might alert Jon to Bran. And when he didn't, I thought, oh, this is not going to end well.
Yeah.
I like how, I mean, in the book, there are several, run-ins where Jon and Bran have near misses. Characters in the book tend to have these near misses, which is very cool as a reader too. Once you kind of wrap your head around where people are in Westeros at what time, having those near misses is a very cool drama to have in the book.
Well, especially because, yeah, and when you're reading it, you get it from two different people's point of view at different places in the book.
Yeah.
You suddenly piece things together.
Yeah. And it's different when they do it in the show, but I thought they handled it kind of as best they could. It wasn't quite as effective, but you still kind of feel Bran's kind of like grown up decision to not run to his older brother and realize that, you know, if he wants to follow Jojen's green sight visions and see the trees that he's been seeing and get to where he needs to go, then, you know, like, he has to escape. And I mean, ultimately that leads to, him taking over Hodor with I don't know what they call it. It's like a warg ability. Takes over.
It's not the sight.
No, I can't remember what it's called. But he jumps into Hodor's body, and then Locke attempts to stop them. Once he has control of Hodor, he picks up Locke and then snaps his neck, but not just like a, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger headlock, you know, kind of snap you while you're down on the ground. It was a head removed from spine, you know, spine protruding from shoulder sort of situation. And it really kind of gives you a taste of the power that Hodor has. But
he is a warg, by the way. That's what it
is. A warg, yeah.
Yeah, he is a warg, and that as such, he has the ability to enter minds.
Yeah, so the power that Hodor has, but then the mental capacity that Hodor has that limits that, you know?
That moment was so heartbreaking when Hodor...
He remembers
realized,
what he does, yeah.
Oh, that was brilliant. I mean, and that's why I think I don't know what it was about this episode, and the reason why I say it was one of my favorite episodes, because I've never been so connected to every scene in an episode. There's a lot of, like, you can kind of zone out sometimes in Game of Thrones because there's some exposition and the blah, 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 troops have moved here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And this episode, everything was important, everything was interesting, and every scene had these things that were just like, oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like these just sort of culmination of lots of different little things and admission, you know, admissions by different people, finding, you know, that Littlefinger was the one who started all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the plans that Lysa Arryn kind of starts talking about in the throne room, I was really surprised. I didn't realize that they were going to lay everything out so quickly.
And they didn't lay out everything, but yeah, I mean, they were just like, you know, because it doesn't matter at this point.
No.
Things are set in motion, mm-hmm. and to find out that who set them in motion, it's still, you don't know who, how, you really don't know what's happening still anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know that just Littlefinger has been, you know, as we always knew, has been manipulating everything. But
yeah.
All of that is pale in comparison to whatever the hell's happening up north.
Oh, geez, I guess so. Yeah, I'm really curious to see how the show moves forward with the White Walkers and the Whites and the...
Especially now that they're showing stuff that's not even in the book.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Same with, what's his face there? The Wildlings. Who's the king of the Wildlings right now?
Mace Rider?
Mace, is it Mace? I don't remember his name. That's awful. I normally know this stuff. Mance Raider.
Mace Rider, Mance Raider.
We were close enough. I knew it was an M. Yeah, like I'm curious to see what's going to happen because I mean last season we got glimpses of giants and his own warg, and I think there's going to be some interesting opportunities in the HBO show to have a lot of really cool stuff happen.
I love what they did. What last episode was showing the whole baby thing with the king.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're seeing they have the opportunity to show stuff that the book couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because the book doesn't have a character to narrate who is up there.
Right.
So the book can't do that other than in legend. So getting to see things using the power of the television media, and that it definitely shows me that they know how to use and how to change the material to fit the media that mm-hmm. they're using.
Yeah, I agree. It didn't bother me that it, you know, wasn't something that I had read in the books. I also had a couple of moments in book 4 and 5 while listening to them where I fell asleep. So I don't know if I always went back to the same spot. So there might be some things that were missed. It didn't really faze me too much.
Well, plus the interesting thing about the books is because they split off and he's like, okay, I'm gonna write about these characters for this one. Then we're going to go rewind and write about these characters for a book.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know that they were originally supposed to be one book, right?
Right. And yeah. And it's, so the fact that he's got the weird organization of the book and now the TV show has to stitch them back together is an interesting sort of problem. It's not a problem, but it means that if you haven't gotten that far, like you've seen half of what's been happening in the books, but not the other half.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is I mean, like where I've read all the books, knowing that they now have to, season 4 here is dealing with the end of book 3 with some tidbits here and there from future books. But next season, it's going to be great because I'm going to be almost in the same kind of blind area that everybody else is, because now I really don't know what they're going to do next, because they're going to be pulling from book 4 and 5 at the same time.
Right.
And so, I mean, I have a rough idea, but I mean, like,
plus he's sending them notes for the next book.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, I mean, there's just so much that's going to happen. I mean, we're only halfway through season 4 and I'm already looking forward to season 5.
Yeah. I thought about going back and rereading them. But I'm, you know, I've always been movie first, book second,
mm-hmm.
because, I'd rather go with the more limited media first. That and then be able to get more out of the story by reading the book.
Yeah.
Versus feeling like just noticing all the things that they ripped out all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to be in the, I don't really remember like in the moment, you know, I'll remember sometimes afterwards or I'll look it up and go, oh yeah, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, for the most part, I just let myself watch it fresh every week.
Yeah. Yeah. My mother wanted to get back into, refreshing herself on the story of Game of Thrones, and she asked about the books, and I said, well, I mean, pick your poison. Jocelyn has them in paperback. I've got them in audiobook. Plus I have, you know, access to the first season on Blu-ray and all this kind of stuff. So, mom, opted to rewatch, yeah, the seasons as opposed to read. I feel like they would still like her and my stepdad would still like the books. They're not, I mean, mom reads, but not a hell of a lot because when she's home here in Nova Scotia in the summertime, she's got a lot of friends and family and stuff like that. But, I think that one thing that I might try to encourage, is, listening to the audiobooks when they go to drive to Florida, in the fall.
How were they? Because I don't know. I would imagine that there, I mean, like you've admitted that there's points where you sort of fell asleep through.
Well,
like yeah. I would imagine that the audiobook could get awfully boring sometime because the book's kind of like, I, you know, there's definitely some skim worthy sections in the book.
They, they're certainly more entertaining because Roy Dotrice, the, very experienced stage actor, yeah, that reads them is brilliant.
Okay.
Especially for the first three books. I think he left. There was a different guy that read book four, and then he came back afterwards. He had a health problem, cancer or a stroke or something like that. So, and then book five, you could tell he was a little off his game. But the first two or three books are fantastic, as read by Roy Dotrice. He makes even a, you know, three-page description of a feast seem tolerable. The sleep was that I would used to listen to them just like people read before bed. I would listen before bed.
Right.
And sometimes I would fall asleep before my timer on my phone would go off and shut the recording down. So, I would sometimes miss, you know, 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here. And book four, it was hard because I would start to tune out, because of all the new characters that they were trying to introduce.
Yep.
So you never really had a home base of a familiar,
more fodder for the,
yeah, a familiar character. So that I found was challenging. Book four was challenging. But after that, once I got back into book five, I was right back on the horse again. I would recommend them. I think they're great. They're long. I mean, there's, yeah, no, the unabridged versions are ridiculously long, but if that's the other thing, I mean, if you've got a hole to fill, whether it's, you know, I mean, I know you don't have a commute, but I mean, if you have, you know, if you walk the dog and you listen to audiobooks or whatever it is, yeah, that, you know, you have a lot of time to fill. Decision made. Like, I mean, if you decide to get into it, you don't have to think about what you're going to fill that time with for the next 6 or 8 months. Like, you know,
I always just worry that, like, you know, it that, you know, a book like that on audio can get so mind numbing that you'd like drive off the road.
But again,
that all, like you said, that all comes down to the voice actor. Any book can be completely destroyed or completely made, you know, yeah, by the person who reads
it.
Well,
this guy comes up with a different voice for every freaking person that speaks. It's ridiculous. It's not just like,
yeah, if you
know,
can pull
that,
that's
Baratheon.
A lot of characters.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane.
And to be able to pull off recognizing who they are by their voice and it's one guy talking. That's,
yep. Yeah, and you can do that. You can absolutely do that.
That reminds me of, this is sort of a change of subject, but have you watched Orphan Black at all?
No, I've heard it's good, but I haven't seen it at all.
Amazing, amazing show. I love it. I mean, it could so easily be kind of cheesy and cliche, but you've got one actress playing like 8 to 10 different clones of herself,
oh,
all
wow,
with different personalities.
Jeez.
And she's brilliant. Really, really good. She is just electric to watch, and I would strongly recommend for anyone access to it. I know it's on BBC America at least. It's a British television show, and it is really, it's really good. And of course, per most British TV shows, nice and short.
Hmm.
No, not these huge, long 24-episode seasons in America.
Yeah, that tends, I find that the British stuff is a lot more dense.
And I think American television is finally getting it, that shorter runs are better. The writers can create a concise storyline, beginning, middle, and end. They don't sit there and drown out. And they're sort of doing it now because they have mid-season breaks.
Right.
They really technically have two seasons. They have the mid-season finale, like Walking Dead sort of does that now.
Yep.
So, you know, they're putting in little arcs in, you know, which is the best thing you can do. But when you just give somebody an infinite slate to write a ton of episodes, they tend to lose their way.
Well, and if you're dealing with some sci-fi shows, like one of our favorite shows right now is Arrow, and we're only halfway through the season, a little more than that. We're past the mid-season break on that show. And you can tell that they could probably do it in 12, maybe 14 episodes. But interspersed in your first and second arcs are these, you know, quote unquote monster of the week, even though, I mean, it's a villain or a plot or whatever. Or it's like, oh, here's a episode about someone I don't care about. Like, I just want to watch Arrow. Like, I don't tune into this for the Daigle show. they've done a better job of tying it into having those episodes still be worth it for the overarching plot of the whole season. But, you know, you could easily lose them and not really be lost as to what the mission was for the season. And it's a lot, you know, like when something is really popular and you finally have an opportunity to say, oh, well, we can add a new show to our roster. Like, what do you want to try to catch up on? And you're like, oh, cool, we can catch up on Arrow. Oh, that's only 44 episodes. Oh, really? Why isn't it 10 or 12?
I love long amounts of show. I love having a show that I can just binge watch, and like, I know I'm not, I don't know, I consume media.
Yeah, well, and we like having something like that too. Like, we're watching Star Wars Clone Wars, and that is six seasons.
So weird. I just like, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago started going through that.
Oh, it's so good. Especially, I mean, how far are you?
I think I'm still in season one.
Oh, dude, yeah. Season one gets better, and then once you get into the end of season two, it's a much different show. It starts.
So do they get away? Because it's very, and it's working, and I'm fine with it, but it's very episodic. It's very, like, disconnected. Every episode is like a tale.
Yeah. By the time you get into season four, it's four episodes in a row of To Be Continued.
Okay.
It, like, you,
and
you,
they sort of did that once with the, there was one stretch of that in season.
Yeah, the first one, I think. The first couple of episodes, maybe?
Something like that. The Grievous section.
The Grievous section, yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, too, is that Grievous becomes a much better villain in the cartoons than he ever was in the movies. And
Star Wars, at this point, should just be cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think, I mean, that's basically what they seem to be doing. The TV shows are going to be cartoons. And the movie, I was a little weirded out by the utter utter constant slapstick of the droids. And then I was like, no, it actually works.
You know, and Jocelyn and I had the same comment. They kind of make my eyes roll at some points. But after you've watched a few seasons, you start to really enjoy the comedy. And it works because it's animated. And it doesn't work when it's in a movie with live action with real people. They don't feel threatening at all.
Yeah.
But in the show, they leave the threatening to the other droids, and the yellow battle droids are just good for a laugh.
Yeah.
they're really, really quite good. The other thing, too, is if you at all are finding Ahsoka annoying, just bear with it. It gets better.
She's okay. I don't like. I'm finding a pretty positive reaction thus far to it.
Yeah, Ahsoka's probably one of my favorite characters in the whole thing, which is really cool.
I did find it a little bit weird that Padawans have lightsabers, but.
Yeah, I feel like
Anakin never had one.
No, but Obi-Wan did in episode one.
Yeah, but he wasn't.
Well, he was.
Was he a Padawan?
Yeah, he had. Was, yeah, he still. He had.
Yeah, the, but he had. He like had, the whole. Well, all right. I guess it's. You get given a. At some point, you get given a lightsaber.
Right.
Right. And then you know, it's just a little weird to see, like, essentially an 8-year-old with a horribly deadly weapon.
Yeah. Well, hang in there. The one thing I do like about the show is that they explain a lot. about Jedi culture in the show, which I think is really, really cool. And they don't beat you over the head with it. Like every once in a while, like sometimes it's not even an episode focused on it. Sometimes it's just like a little conversation between Anakin and Ahsoka, or something that Obi-Wan has to talk to Anakin about. And they start to drop these breadcrumbs about like, oh, so that's where that happens. Or, ooh, I didn't know that. And I've always wanted, I've heard about this. And I know that it exists, but I've never seen it. So you get to see their visual take on some of the lore of Star Wars, which is very cool. But
it's also very nice and interesting to see, you know, Anakin and Padme actually have chemistry with each other.
Yes.
Versus the movies where they had none.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm just like, I was like, really, they just need to go back and redo the movies in CGI.
I was surprised they could find such a bad actor to play Anakin in the Star Wars movies. And I was also surprised that a actor that I enjoy immensely in Natalie Portman could deliver lines so just empty.
It's called bad direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I should say lack there. No direction. Yeah.
No direction.
Those were sad, sad moments. And you kind of have to just take those movies as I look at the prequels as the Matrix. Mm-hmm. You know, the Matrix trilogy. It ends up being just pure entertainment and fluff, and you kind of have to take it that way and not put too much stock into it. But you know, it's really hard not to put. You know, we've built Star Wars up so much in our mind.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Well, seeing as we've gone down a Star Wars cartoon rat hole, I'm assuming that we're pretty much done talking about this week's Game of Thrones. Any final thoughts before we wrap up the show?
No, like I said, I'm just really impressed with this episode, and every scene connected with me, like, across the board. And I was like, okay, I was happy. I was happy for the characters. And I was happy. Oh, the only other thing I want to say, Pod trying to ride a horse, hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good, that and the
his
scenes.
Moment with Brienne, like, just every couple that we saw had just really interesting scenes, like every single time. And I was just like, that was a well-written, arced episode.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the conversations between Arya and the Hound. I thought those were quite funny.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that.
That was the humor in this episode was Arya and the Hound. And
yeah,
she was talking about, like, she's twirling around and looking ridiculous. And he's just like, what are you doing? And she explains that she's water dancing and that her great swordsman teacher. And what happened to him? He died. He wasn't a very good swordsman, was he? How did he die? Well, Meryn Trant killed him. And then the Hound snarks and just like,
yep.
Meryn Trant is a glorified thug. And then Arya tries to stab the Hound. It does nothing because he's wearing leather armor and probably chainmail, and she's got this little needle sword. And he's like, he died because Sir Meryn Trant had armor and a big fucking sword. It's just like, both Jocelyn,
like,
and I threw our heads back, you know?
Like, what I don't get there is, I mean, it's, you know, it's very clear he sacrificed himself for Arya so that she could get away.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand
And I'm like, why didn't she say that? But she's just so incensed. Like, it's such a conversation about his abilities that, you know, she's just like, well, all he had was a stick. Like, well, there's a reason all he had was a stick.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, that was amusing, but nothing was funnier than her going to sleep and saying the Hound's name as the last name. Just that, like, perfect moment. And the horror when he woke up and she wasn't there, and he's like, wait, it's like that second of, is she going to try and kill me?
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Too funny. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is the end of the show where I get to share some very fun stuff that I found online with you guys. And this particular Internet Minute is brought to you by Tweaked Audio. The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. Lots of good stuff there, even mic'd sets available for iPhones and other cell phone devices, and lifetime warranty, 7 different colors and styles, like there's all kinds of great stuff. So visit tweakedaudio.com and don't forget that code TCC at checkout. My pick this week is another photo set from photographer Sophie Gamond. I have posted some...
I choose Gamond.
Gamond? Gamond. It's very commanding.
Sophie.
Yeah, we've featured some of her work before. She had photographed dogs shaking water off. And I used those in actually one of my show art pieces a little while ago. Now she has taken portraits of wet dogs, just fresh from a bath or in the process of being bathed. And some are not happy. Some just look miserable. And others look ridiculously like people. So if you are a dog lover or a lover of really silly pictures, then check out the link to Sophie Gamand, GAMAND.com, /wet-dog. And that is where you'll find this photo set.
It's amazing the horrible things that happen to dog fur when it's wet.
Mm-hmm.
It looks so disgusting.
Some of these people I call them people. Some of these dogs, they just look like people. They look like old men. They look like cartoons. It's ridiculous. I really enjoy the small, I guess it looks like a chihuahua, that does not look happy to be wet.
Right.
looks like the
owner. I love how you can't even tell half the time what these dogs are.
No.
There's one though of it's like 1, 2, 3, 4. The sixth one down. This dog who's just got his chin up and is just like, I'm not gonna give you the time of day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my favorite.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah. My favorite of the last, there's one that's a gray poodle, I think. Yeah. It looks very, very fun. And I enjoy the last one quite a bit.
With the tongue sticking
out.
The one right before that with his, I don't even know what kind of dog that is.
I think it's a Shih Tzu.
Short nose, like the eyes are right at the top of his head. Yeah. And just those, that poor one little eye. It was so sad.
Yeah. And it's probably not even sad, right? It's just that the fur is making a sad eyebrow shape. So
this is very true.
Your brain kind of does a cartoon and thinks, oh, that's a sad face. When really the dog is probably perfectly happy.
I don't care. I think he's sad.
Anyway. I thought that was quite funny. So it's odd because normally I have an opportunity to do stuff like this with the show art and put maybe a dog on the show art, but I do the show art for Game of Thrones. So it's weird. Right. I have to have a choice, you know, maybe I can do something with the hound. I don't know. try to work something together for the hound. It should be interesting. But that's it, folks. That's the episode this week. As always, we record live every Wednesday night at 8 PM Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com. Music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. And of course, you can view the episode and the show art on thecitadelcafe.com, which, by the way, has a brand new look, now free of any bugs. Our friend frequent guest host on the Citadel Cafe, Ryan Murphy, has been working with me for the last couple of weeks to revamp the Citadel Cafe website. So if you go there, you can see this week's episode, a few previous episodes. There's an archive. There's a brand new live page that works quite well now. All of it is responsive and mobile friendly. So no matter what device you're on, you can, if you're not an iTunes or a podcast subscriber, then you can always just go to the website and listen at your leisure. So that's something I'm really quite happy with. If you want to check out other things that Ryan has designed or helped design, you can find him at ryanmurphy.ca. And I'm hoping to do more websites with him in the future. I kind of handled the visual layout of thecitadelcafe.com, and then Ryan was the back-end guy order to make sure everything was functioning and working the way that we wanted it to. So yeah, I'm quite happy with it. If you have a correction to send us on many of the things we spoke about this week, you can email thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, or of course, find us on Twitter and Facebook with just the show name. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. Please check out my Patreon page. That is where you can find my comic work and what I'm doing to keep that comic work going. It's patreon.com/Joel Duggan. Let's see what else have I got here. I've got Twitter. I've got Facebook. I've got DeviantArt. I've got Tumblr. I've got all of these things. And it's all just my name, Joel Duggan. So if you can find that online, you can probably find me. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @CopperDome. You can find me, I'm on Facebook as me, but that's really personal. It's not really, I don't know. It's kind of different for me. So mostly Twitter. Yeah, I would say follow me on Twitter at Copperdome, and stay tuned for some possible new show. Maybe I'll actually talk Joel into doing a podcast.
We'll see.
Another podcast.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. I've learned one thing about podcasting. It's like a disease. You know, the more that you do of one show, the more shows you realize you want to do. And it's just a matter of trying to find the time. Yep. And for anybody that was interested, juxtaname.com is John's name site. I don't know if we spelled that at the beginning of the show, but
you're right. Yeah, we didn't.
Sounds like a really fun place to go check out baby names and potentially puppy names, depending on what new addition you're looking at adding to the family.
I guess if you if you're one to give your puppy a first name and a middle name, yeah. So yeah, if you want full name for your dog, anything you want to name. Gather up all your lists there, invite a partner, and you can both share the same list and see who likes what.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate you you being on the show this week. It's been a lot of fun.
I had a great time. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. Anytime. You have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Cheap. Wait, two. Oh, crap.